The Curbsiders Teach podcast is for entertainment, education, and information purposes only, and the topics discussed should not be used solely to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any diseases or conditions.
Furthermore, the views and statements expressed on this podcast are solely those of the speakers and should not be interpreted to reflect the official policy or position of any entity. You should always do your homework and give us any feedback.
Welcome back, y'all, to the Curbsiders Teach Season 6, our series on health professions education. I'm Dr. Ira Krzyzanowska, joined by my new and amazing co-host, Dr. Mike Chang. On today's episode, we'll be discussing successfully navigating the teaching and learning experience with Gen Z learners with our guests, Mrs. Dina Siegel and Drs. Ellie Newcomb and Sanjay Patel. Before we get started with that, Mike, will you remind me, the audience, what we do on this show?
Yes, of course. We are the health professions podcast for all things education. We use expert interviews to bring you teaching pearls and practice-changing knowledge to inspire the next generation of clinician educators. I'm excited to be joining as a new but permanent co-host, and coming on over the next few episodes, I'll be transitioning in while Dr. Molly Hoyblein will be transitioning out as co-host as she starts a new chapter in her career. We have such a great conversation with our guests where we review the take-home points from a few different workshops at AIM Week 2026, the National Conference of the Alliance for Academic Internal Medicine, that relate to learning and teaching with Gen Z learners.
Thanks, Mike. And we're going to miss Molly so much. And we are very excited for this new chapter two with Dr. Mike Chang. So for our guests today, we first have Ellie Newcomb presenting on behalf of Drs. Dylan McCreary, Jake Hillier, and Carolyn Hoffmeister from their workshop, Bridging the Gap in Academic Medicine. Ellie Newcomb is a former cycling tour guide and current clinical assistant professor with the University of Utah's Department of Internal Medicine. She attended University of Minnesota Medical School, followed by residency and chief year at University of Arizona College of Medicine in Phoenix. Her academic interests include leadership and graduate medical education, the application of evidence-based trauma-informed care for refugees and asylum seekers or asylees, excuse me. In her free time, she enjoys spending time with family and friends, arts and crafts, and cross-country skiing.
We also have Dr. Sanjay A. Patel presenting on behalf of Drs. Laura Paletta-Hobbs, Anastasios Kapitanos, and Vignesh Doraswamy from their workshop titled The Richmond Way, Psychological Safety as a Leadership Tool. Sanjay A. Patel is a senior associate program director at Riverside Methodist Hospital in Columbus, Ohio. After college, he was a computer programmer before pivoting to a career in medicine. He spent his first 2 years of medical school in the United Kingdom and graduated from Ross University, followed by residency and chief residency at Cook County Hospital in Chicago. His interests include point-of-care ultrasound, procedures, global health, technology and AI, and learning theory as it pertains to adults. In his free time, he is a hashtag girl dad to an 11 and 12-year-old and a husband of 19 years. He loves to cook and eat and travel.
And last but certainly not least, we also have Mrs. Dina Siegel presenting on behalf of herself and Rebecca Clements and Regina Steffen from their workshop, Catching Your Residents' Attention, Communication and Design Best Practices. Dina Siegel is employed with the University Hospital's Cleveland Medical Center, Case Western University, in the Department of Medicine for 35 years plus. She's been working with residents and fellows in the internal medicine residency program for 25 of those years. Dina has been involved with the Alliance for Academic Internal Medicine, APTEM, for 25 years, presented many workshops for program administrator, and she served as chair for the GME Resident and Fellowship Committee for the University Hospital's Cleveland Medical Center, and chair-elect and chair past president for the Alliance for Academic Internal Medicine. Currently, Dina is overseeing the residency and fellowship administrators within the Department of Medicine.
We're excited to bring you this season of Curbsiders Teach with the support of and in partnership with the Alliance for Academic Internal Medicine. A reminder that most episodes are available for CME credit through VCU Health CE for all health professionals at curbsiders.vcuhealth.org. Thank you to all our Patreon members. If you love the Curbsiders family of content and haven't yet joined, please consider supporting us in continuing to create this amazing resource.
So without further ado, let's get to it. Welcome, everyone. We are so excited to have you, Drs. Newcomb, Patel, and Mrs. Siegel. Really happy to have you here. Is it okay if we call you Ellie, Sanjay, and Dina, respectively, for this recording?
Yes. Of course.
Absolutely.
Wonderful. Thank you all so much for coming on the show. We always start with some rapid fire questions to get to know each of you a little bit better. Maybe perhaps, Ellie, can we start with you to kind of hear a one liner to describe yourself and something outside of medicine about yourself?
Yeah, I am a community focused scrappy humanist who is constantly balancing risk aversion with love of higher risk activities.
Can you give an example of such higher risk activities?
Oh my goodness. I mean, hospital medicine, for one. You're doing a lot of balancing risk, but I love to mountain bike. I was airlifted a couple years ago, and that never has to happen again.
Oh, goodness.
Definitely scrappy.
Yes, very scrappy, very scrappy. Yeah. Wow. Well, thank you, Ellie. That's amazing. Well, hoping all risks are, you know, equally balanced during this recording.
I agree.
Sanjay, maybe we'll switch to you. One-liner of who you are and something outside of medicine as well.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. First and foremost, thanks for having us on today. But I think my one-liner is probably hospitalist, educator, point-of-care ultrasound, clinical reasoning, husband, hashtag girl dad, amateur chef, professional traveler, and addicted to travel, college football, and professional soccer.
Great. Well, yeah, as a millennial, love those hashtags.
Exactly.
Nice. Way to plug that in, one, Mike. I appreciate it. Hopefully no one has been airlifted, Sanjay, as a part of your travel sports.
No, thankfully not. A few in-flight, urgencies. I wouldn't call them emergencies, but that's about it.
Well, they were lucky to have you there. That's for sure. That's awesome. And then, Dina, do you mind sharing a one-liner about yourself and something outside of medicine as well?
Yes, I've been in hospital medicine for almost 36 years, and I am a wife and a mom. I have two girls, and I'm also the mom of a 15-year-old puppy. I would call myself a newsie. I sit down. I love to listen to the MSNBC and CNN and all different newscasts. And I'm also have an addiction to Dateline TV. And yes, it's always the husband.
Actually, I'm a big fan of the podcast, actually. So.
Yes.
That's amazing. We'll have to remember that one. That one will definitely be a hashtag for one of our take-home points. Remember, it's always the husband. Yeah. Well, we'd love to hear from each of you kind of how your experience has been at the Academic Internal Medicine Week. You know, maybe what surprised you, a take-home point you've learned, anything like that. And, you know, Dina, feel free to start us off.
Oh, I thought it was just terrific. I'm just amazed every year how they put together a seamless meeting for so many thousands of people to come. I mean, and from around the country, the venue is always in a great location, and it's always well organized, well set up. I enjoy meeting all the vendors that we speak with throughout the year and then meeting them in person. And it's great to be able to connect with your colleagues in person and also meet some new folks. And this year they have a little spot where they have puppies. They have them set up in the back of the exhibit hall, and you can go in and sit with a puppy or two for a little bit. I squeezed over real fast before I ran to get set up here so I could get a puppy fix. And these are real puppies. They're little. They're not, you know, 15 years old, but that was just a nice wellness. So.
It's, oh, my goodness. Yes, I love always, that.
Yeah, it's always a wonderful experience at the conferences.
And we should shout out because AIM is our main sponsor. And so we're just really grateful and really happy to be kind of sponsored by them and also to be around therapy dogs. I wonder if it's always the dog husband, you know, a la the Dateline quote. I'm not sure. Yeah.
Ellie, how has it been for you?
It has been fantastic so far. AIM Week is my favorite conference every single year. And as someone who recently moved from University of Arizona, Phoenix to University of Utah, it has been such a joy to connect with colleagues from U of A while forging new connections with colleagues from U of U.
Love that. Love that. It's such a nice kind of smorgasbord of people, you know, and really yes. True networking experience for, you know, as you mentioned and Dina mentioned, like the whole group, whatever your interest is, whatever your area is, you know, AIM's got you covered. So that's amazing.
100%.
Yeah, that's wonderful. And Sanjay, what about you? What's been your experience at AIM Week?
Yeah, it's been great. I love coming to this conference year after year whenever I'm able to. You know, so far, it's been wonderful to connect with new folks, to reconnect with colleagues. Dr. Bigdahl's keynote this morning was energetic, inspiring, introspective. Loved hearing him talk. And I, you know, love the conferencing. You get to talk to lots of people who are also trying out, you know, these crazy ideas. And you're like, I'm not the only one here trying to do something inventive. But also, you know, just the networking part of any conference, but especially AIM, just really getting to know people, and that kind of getting to know people in the interstitium, the time in between. I'm glad you told me, Dina, about the dogs, because I'm actually allergic to dogs, so I'm not going to go back to that portion of the exhibit hall.
Yeah, it's towards the back, and they were there just from 11 to 2 today, so.
Amazing. Well, definitely, yes, definitely, Sanjay, avoid that if possible, but also, yes, to folks who, you know, want dog therapy, it sounds like that's the way to go. And yeah, I agree. I think AIM has just done an amazing job putting everything together, and also the inspiring plenaries and the keynotes. So what a huge, huge win for them. And y'all are at AIM presenting your workshops, and definitely would love to hear kind of maybe briefly from each of you. Maybe Sanjay, we can start with you, kind of what made you passionate about the areas that you are presenting on? It sounds like you mentioned, you know, people are presenting all sorts of things from left and right and center, but kind of what made you be passionate about this area and how you decided to present it as a workshop.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm happy to explore this rabbit hole. But I think it was about 2018 when I lived in Chicago, and all the residency programs in Chicago kind of created this mini AIM conference that I was part of on this planning committee. And I remember two of the keynote speakers invited were Marty Muntz from Medical College of Wisconsin and Jeff LaRochelle at University of Central Florida. I think he's since moved on, but they were talking about psychological safety, and it was a term that I had heard but not really knew a ton about. And it sort of coincided with right around the time when the book by Amy Edmondson, The Fearless Organization, came out. And I just kind of started digging more and more, and went down that rabbit hole. And then it sort of fell off my radar, you know, with all the craziness of the pandemic. And then you know, this seemingly ridiculous TV show on Apple TV came out around that time, Ted Lasso. And I started watching that and started to bring back a lot of these things around psychological safety to me, about teamwork and leadership. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of how it all meshed together. And I've just been going down rabbit hole after rabbit hole around psychological safety, but especially, you know, in the role as an educator, of the importance of creating those spaces, those brave spaces for our learners, for our faculty, and really being kind of the tone setter for culture within our programs and organizations.
Yeah, thanks for sharing. Just, it's such an interesting kind of journey back and forth in that regard. So maybe we'll ask Ellie next.
Yeah, so chief residents often find themselves sort of mediating between faculty and resident dynamics. And my colleagues and I, through a shared chief year together, sort of worked to find the way that best worked for us to do so. And then sort of taking a look at it through generational theory to provide more of a schema as we see younger and younger learners come through our program. And our workshop shared this knowledge with rising chiefs, and then we used some scenarios that we encountered during our chief year to frame this discussion.
Great, yeah. I think it's so important learning about how to communicate well, work well between generations. So,
100%.
Now shifting over to Dina.
Our workshop had a little different of a flair. It was communication and working with the best way to communicate and understanding for our residents. And we really started off in the very beginning, like when I started, paper applications were out. ARIS was just coming on board for online application service. And at that time, it was only on one machine. So my program director was in my office before I, every morning, downloading, looking over applications. And then we, you know, didn't have any of these online scheduling systems, and we didn't have anything with ARIS to connect for scheduling, not like we do today. And so we really spoke about the evolution. We were still in paper files for a while, and I brought somebody down from the GME office. I had a vacancy. They were all paperless, and that's what she started in 2017. We all went paperless, everything went archived. And we started the change with residents, especially the orientation time, from passing out paper to, you know, getting into PowerPoint presentations and trying to do less with email and sending but more attachments. We started even doing their onboarding with a lanyard, so with a jump drive, so they could just plug it into the computer and have the information and go paperless. Mm-hmm. And, you know, evolving all the way through to now, we have a pamphlet. We give everything out in you know, increments of as little emails as possible, because mm-hmm. they'd rather do everything by phone and try to get the communication out as best as we can.
And I think this communication piece and kind of capturing attention, all of this really lends itself really well to our topic today. So maybe if folks are ready, we'll jump into the case.
Before we jump into the case, we thought it would be an interesting question, just for the sake of, you know, more of the intro is, we're wondering if you can go around and talk about which generation you self-identify with and something you're hoping to improve as you work with Gen Z.
It's a good one. Mike was focused on this question, so we should really hear folks' answers. And also, if you feel like you don't want to kind of reveal self-identify or anything like that, totally fine. You can kind of pass if it doesn't feel right to you.
Well, I can get started. If you haven't guessed, I'm a boomer and started way back when, you know, with the technology just starting out. So I'm learning to learn with them. So yes, I would identify myself as a boomer.
And then is there something you're hoping to improve on as it relates to working with Gen Z?
You know, I'm really hoping that I can learn how to better communicate to them and learn their style. And over the years, as paper has, you know, become obsolete and getting more, you know, in tune to the computer and things like that, it's been helping me to prepare myself for where we are going personally and professionally, to be in tune to where they're going, because they're leading us. So we can't resist it. We have to go forward with it. And I take it as a learning experience for myself.
Yeah. I love that, Dina. The growth mindset coming through. Yes. You know, nothing is constant except for change. There's always changing. So yes. things are evolving. Thank you for that. Sanjay, what would you say if you feel like identifying with a particular generation and maybe what you're hoping to improve as it relates to working with Generation Z folks?
Absolutely. I'm kind of in this in-between phase. I was, no shame about my age, but I was born in 1980. So I'm kind of at the tail end of Generation X. And I think what people like to call the a geriatric millennial. So I sort of identify, I guess, with some aspects of both generations. But I think with newer generations, a couple things. I think just kind of as an educator, especially around feedback and navigating those conversations, understanding of feedback, I almost feel like sometimes feedback has become like the F word of medicine. And how do we recalibrate that? But also working in this kind of shared journey, especially post-pandemic, of kind of the moral injury that is sort of pervasive in the world of medicine, and how to relate to a generation that has only grown up in that space versus having some perspective kind of pre and post.
Thank you. And then Ellie, what about you? How do you feel relative to that?
I am definitely a millennial, sort of smack dab in the middle. And all of my younger siblings are Gen Z. And so it's sort of been fun to see how my upbringing experience, how I communicate, how I am, differs a little bit to the environment in which they grew up. This is the first year I'm not using a paper calendar, and I feel like... Yeah. You know, I'm patting myself on the back about that one. So, Dina, I was very impressed about how sort of you've moved your program from everything being written to having a very, you know, app-focused, technology-forward system. And with regard to working with Gen Z, I think, you know, this is a broad generalization, but Gen Z tends to trust the person before the title. And in my clinical practice, I'm working on showing up to the clinical setting as a human first, and then attending and clinical assistant professor second. We are all humans. We're all here for shared patient care. And I think when we prioritize that, having such range of experience and depth of knowledge is crucial for caring for human beings.
Oh, great.
And Ellie, I feel like that also kind of brings back the humanity piece that you were talking about, Sanjay, also in psychological safety, I feel like is really connected to what you were just saying, Ellie, that kind of you want to see the human, you want to feel safe with the human, you want to feel like you trust their, you know, fearless leadership and kind of move forward with that. So I don't know, Sanjay, if you, I don't know if I missed your kind of interest in this or like what you're hoping to learn from Gen Z. I just had a flashback that maybe I didn't hear that part from you.
No, very much so. I think there's a lot of relational in there. I definitely agree with what Ellie said. I think, you know, kind of centering humanism, not just in generations, but kind of this changing landscape of medicine when it comes to things like technology and care delivery, and kind of the fear that is awaiting a lot of people, but, you know, kind of getting around that, circumventing that fear with centering humanity in those conversations.
Well,
love that synergy. Yeah, Mike, go for it.
I was just going to thank everyone for sharing. And, you know, I think it's a good segue into our case. So I'll go ahead and read our case. So this is from our fictional Cashlack Memorial. So Marianne, a clinician educator, has noted that Jane, a health professions learner, has had difficulties applying the feedback and knowledge area correction that Marianne has provided during their clinical time together. Jane has noted that she is a Gen Z learner and does things differently. Marianne comes to you to ask for advice. So question number one, what is coming up for you all as Marianne asks for guidance on successfully navigating this learning environment and her teaching approaches? Why is this so difficult?
Yeah, and maybe Ellie, we can start with you. You know, not selfishly, maybe many of us have found ourselves in Marianne's shoes. Who knows? You know, I don't want to extrapolate, but to Mike's point, like, is there maybe something you could share that highlights the generational model and how kind of this could play into what maybe Marianne is experiencing and asking for your guidance, as Mike was saying?
Very much so. And I think from a former chief standpoint, my first question is, has this been communicated yet? You know, sort of the first round of feedback has been given, but is sort of this observation about what this learner does with feedback, is that something that's been shared? And then my next step would be sort of what other information do we need to work on this together? It doesn't necessarily strike me as a Gen Z problem. I think it's an alignment problem of how do we get this educator and this learner on the same page? And I think it is very hard to navigate. Both people are likely operating from sort of internally coherent worldviews that were never made explicit. And at risk of generalizing, medicine's hierarchy was built on this sort of paid your dues mentality that often resonates with older generations. And I think we see Gen Z coming into the workplace, not necessarily getting that memo, expecting more of a bidirectional feedback model. And it's not inherently wrong. I think just explicit communications are needed to be on the same page.
Totally. And I don't know, Sanjay or Dina, if y'all have other thoughts on why this could be so hard. And obviously, we can come back to Ellie to share about the generational model, because I do think that this is, you know, this does play a role. And, you know, as background, I think Molly and I have been thinking about this type of episode for as long as Curbsiders Teach has existed. And I think we, each of us were like, no, it's cool. We don't need this, you know, piece of exact guidance or, you know, adjusting our teaching. But it was such a blind spot, you know, speaking of the book, kind of Fearless Leadership, Sanjay, that you brought up, it's all about like addressing your blind spots, right? And I think this is an area where I think many of us have blind spots, but maybe haven't come around to kind of addressing it. And whether it is alignment, Ellie, like you were saying, or just, you know, there really is a generational potential impact. I think many of us just haven't really kind of taken the time to think about it. So I don't know, Sanjay, Dina, if you have other responses or thoughts on this piece.
Well, I was going to comment too with Liz. Ellie said, does the learner have an idea that there's, you know, some kind of a gap and so forth? So that would be something I would, you know, like you'd need to address that with the learner. And also, you hate to say it, but, you know, try to communicate and give whatever best feedback you can.
I think that's so key in terms of communication. Make sure it's bidirectional. Make sure that you're communicating clearly, communicating well, not just in your own style, but also to see how communication can be received. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Sanjay, wanted to ask if you have anything else to add.
Yeah, absolutely. I think I've certainly been there, and I've seen many, many colleagues in the same situation, but and learners in the same situation as well. And I think it's hard when we have learners that don't conform to a perceived expectation that a clinician educator has. And a lot of this is experiential as an educator. So as you see different learners and different learning styles and different ways that people approach things, we kind of iteratively improve ourselves and learn how to best approach individualized learning with somebody. I root it back to Dr. Bignall's keynote this morning, where he talked about, you know, diversity in many different spaces and places. And this is, you know, learner diversity, ways that different people approach things. So really making sure that we understand, first and foremost as educators, that the one-size-fits-all approach does not work. Sitting down and really just, you know, being curious, asking questions, forming kind of the shared partnership of, you know, how do we navigate this moving forward?
Yeah, that sounds great. And I think definitely that theme of individualization that you were mentioning, I think so key as well.
And Ellie, should you drop the knowledge bomb for us of the generational model and whether there's a role for that here? Just to, like, I know the listeners are on the edge of their seats, so maybe take us through what that could possibly mean.
Yeah, let's get into it. So the generational model, it's a social theory that groups people based on shared historical experiences to explain patterns and values and behaviors. And I think something we really have to keep in mind is that it is an imperfect heuristic, and it has to be interpreted in the context of individuals' lived experiences. With regard to medical education, especially academic internal medicine, the medical education model is a hierarchical apprenticeship model, and it was built on values that align mm-hmm. very closely with older generations: deference to authority, earning your place, learning through observation. And we have Gen Z entering the same structure, prioritizing autonomy, authenticity, the big F word, feedback. And it creates, you know, it creates this understandable friction. And so I think our key is really recognizing neither worldview is wrong. They were just never made explicit to each other. And these worldviews exist in a power structure that does prioritize older generations and the experience that comes mm-hmm. with decades of practice.
Yeah, and I think one thing that makes me think of, thank you for explaining that model for us, I would imagine with this type of model, there can be a pitfall sometimes of generalizing and that the issue with, like, making assumptions based on one's generation. Can you speak a little bit about that and, you know, maybe the pitfalls of generalizing, or, you know, how you think about, are we generalizing too much?
Mm-hmm. Of course. And I think, you know, the biggest risk and challenge is that we stop being curious because we are relying on generational stereotypes of, you know, in this example, if we label Jane as a Gen Z learner who does things differently, we might miss the actual issue, which could be unclear expectations, timing of feedback, or psychological safety. You know, maybe Jane is approached by Marion, freezes, and then doesn't really hear the rest of the feedback. And doesn't feel safe enough then to incorporate that into practice. I think ultimately generational thinking, it should be a tool that opens a conversation, keeps us curious, rather than closing conversation or putting people in boxes.
100%. I feel like being curious, besides being, you know, one of Ted Lasso's huge comments or kind of themes throughout it, which, don't worry, Sanjay, we'll get to that piece. I think that's huge in this, Ellie, because what you're mentioning is, like, for us to stay open-minded in conversations with anyone, right? Colleagues, learners, anyone on the street. And I wonder, before we get to the curiosity and the psychological psychological safety and size, maybe Dina or Sanjay, do y'all have kind of reflections to Mike's question? Like, what challenges exist with these types of generalizations and kind of thinking about generations in a particular way?
Yeah, definitely. I think it goes back to, I think we talked earlier about individualization and really getting to know, you know, has Marion gotten to know Jane? Jane went to X medical school. Experience in that medical school was different than the medical school that Marion went to. Jane has had a history of, you know, just things that have worked for her and things that have not worked for her when it comes to learning. So just being asking questions, right? We don't know until we sit down and ask, and creating a safe space for that person to say, this is my experience, and I want somebody to kind of help me and guide me through that. And as an educator, being open to that and sitting down saying, let me learn about your experience, and we will navigate this together. As Ellie said, really, a group of learners want, especially newer groups of learners, really want to focus in and on the human and the individual rather than the title.
Yeah, no, that sounds great. And I think it just really highlights the importance and the beauty of getting to know those you're mentoring as individuals, as people knowing their humanity as well. So that's great. Dina, any thoughts on your end?
You know, sometimes too, I think we can mentor as we see fit and provide feedback, but sometimes the mentoring for the Gen Z or your beginning learners may learn from a more senior resident or a fellow, or perhaps some mentorship, from them, and they can help guide and maybe communicate in ways that, as faculty may not be able to, but maybe they just need, a mentor of such, just to be able to discuss things with and hash things over and try to probably maybe re-explain in a way that Marion isn't able to get through to Jane, but somebody else is. And sometimes that may be a good avenue.
Dina, I love that, because it's like the power of your peer group too. Like you're kind of almost the folks who are near peers to you even as well. It might be, more psychologically safe not to push that transition, but it might be more kind of appropriate to feel like someone closer to you could maybe either explain this or give context to a certain situation. I think, Dina, you've set up Sanjay for the question around psychological safety in this interaction, but I don't know, Sanjay, if you have other things to add relative to helping Marion and Jane's conversations.
No, I mean, I think you summed up a lot of very important points, and I think that the biggest thing is allowing a space for the learner to be their authentic self, so that they can themselves ask questions, themselves seek out opportunities for growth, themselves be able and be comfortable being vulnerable. After all, as a learner, you're kind of in this weird space. As a resident, you're a learner, but you're also an employee, and you're a doctor, but not quite exactly sort of a thing. So, allowing for people to kind of navigate all of those roles at the same time, but within an environment that allows you to do so without judgment or fear of repercussion.
Yeah, and I love that in terms of that space to be. You were mentioning your authentic self, and I think there's so many things that we can learn from Gen Z as well in terms of. I love environments where I can be my authentic self, and would I want to see more and more of that in medicine, of course. And then Dina, I know in terms of your expertise in communication, how do you think about communicating with Gen Z nowadays, and how communication relates to this issue between Mary and Jane?
We've often found too, not only with written communication, but trying to be as brief as we can and not to be wordy in explanations and things like that, but also welcoming people, to come back and say, if this isn't clear to you on how to complete X, Y, and Z, would love for you to come into the office. We can sit down, we can work through this together. And sometimes on a one-on-one interaction is maybe more helpful listening to the verbal word instead of seeing the written word and to get through things. So we always have an open door policy for people to come in at any point in time and be able to be heard and to be able to explain things and to be able to, to be on the same page. And that's often been helpful as well.
One of our, one of our hopes was to also go through some of the frameworks and kind of tools that Ellie had brought up in terms of working with Gen Z learners, and think about how like the literature and some of these frameworks and tools can even help Marion in this conversation with Jane, or in her future conversations with Jane, and how to kind of take us to the next level, so to speak.
Yeah. So in our presentation, we provide two frameworks, organizational psychology and leadership theory, and then three tools. a multi-generational alignment map, powerful questions, and a drama triangle to evaluate interpersonal dynamics on care teams. So with organizational psychology, that reminds us that performance is shaped by environment. So things like hierarchy, feedback culture, and psychological safety are so important in an organization. Leadership theory pushes us to adapt our style to the learner and not vice versa. So with these two frameworks, instead of asking, you know, why isn't Jane improving, these frameworks ask, what about this environment and leadership style isn't supporting her learning? So those are sort of the first two frameworks. And then the three tools that we have, because we're diving into the multi-generational alignment map further down the road, I'm going to hold off on getting to that just yet, leaving folks on the edge of their seat. And then with the drama triangle, people in conflict will default to sort of three roles, persecutor, victim, or rescuer. And there is an alternative to that where Marion should be moving from a persecutor role to more of a coach role, like Ted Lasso, best coach ever, and asking questions, not solving them for Jane. And then Jane needs to step into agency, sort of moving from victim or this feedback is happening to me versus moving to what in this triangle they call thriver, which is a bit of a riff off survivor, but how do I take this feedback and do something with it? And then our last one is powerful questions. So that encourages us to lead with what and not why. So instead of asking Jane sort of why would you do that, more what were you thinking in this scenario? And it can help shift answers from defensiveness to, you know, I did this because, to insight of I was thinking when I did this, this is what I was thinking.
Yeah, those tools are so interesting sounding. In terms of my attention goes to the drama triangle. Would you say that that's applicable for a lot of
Mike loves instances? The drama.
I like watching drama. I don't like being in drama. But for the drama triangle, is it helpful to use that framework for any type of conflict or any type of tense interaction? Is it kind of broadly applicable in that sense?
I think it is broadly applicable. And so with the trauma triangle, it's something that as chiefs, when there was a situation that came up, sometimes we would pull it up with our PD on the screen and say, all right, you know, what roles do we see ourselves in now? And how do we shift to a more productive role where ultimately, instead of trying to figure out a whodunit, we shift to a why did this happen and how can we move forward together on the same team to understand why decisions were made and then why did said outcome happen?
And I like how in that example, you already used both the drama triangle and the powerful questions, kind of reframing your questions in that way.
And I think they all work hand in hand. You know, there's a lot of overlap in this situation.
Well, I know, Sanjay, you also presented in your workshop a tool, really this Ted Lasso reference and the acronym BELIEVE, about talking about the culture of psychological safety. We're wondering if you can explain that a little bit more and, you know, what it stands for and how to integrate this into our teaching and learning approaches.
And maybe, Sanjay, before you jump into that, just because we are keeping everyone on the edge of their seat, Mike, I think Ellie still needs to tell us about the multi-generational alignment map, though I may have had an absence seizure and forgotten it, but because that has happened during these podcast episodes. So I don't know, Ellie, did you mention it? And I just totally forgot it.
No, I've mentioned it, but we have yet to get into it. And I'm okay. Happy to lead us there and then pass it off to Sanjay.
Yes. Would that work? Is that okay? Sorry, Mike, not to make more drama, but it's just because you love it so much. I decided to like add a little riff. Don't worry, we'll edit this part out. Or maybe we won't because we want to keep the drama.
Leave it in there.
Ellie, do you mind reminding us what the multi-generational alignment map is?
So the alignment map, it is essentially a series of questions that outline clear expectations at the beginning of a rotation for a multi-generational healthcare team. And so my colleagues and I adapted organizational psychology principles to medical education power dynamics to create this map. And this map, we want to reiterate, it is a conversation starter. It's not a validated tool. And we look at five domains that often come up in the medical education world. We look at communication style, feedback, professionalism, workload and wellness, and learning preferences. And then there are corresponding questions to those five domains. For communication, how quickly should team members respond and on what platforms? Feedback, what cadence works for everyone? What format feels most constructive? Perhaps this could be helpful for Jane and Marion. Professionalism, what behaviors define professionalism in our program? Workload and wellness, how do we maintain patient care while protecting wellness? And then learning preferences, what format improves engagement and learning outcomes? And I think with Marion and Jane, perhaps Jane interpreted the feedback as too frequent, became overwhelmed, or Marion was too vague in sharing her coaching with Jane. So had they had this map and conversation prior to working together, they perhaps would have had clearer expectations for moving into a co-working space together. And I think sort of stepping back in the bigger picture with the frameworks and tools are ultimately Gen Z learners will become Gen Z experts. And so we have to ask ourselves, how do we uplift younger generations in the learning space while building upon the work of our clinical predecessors?
Oh, great. Yeah, I think I really appreciate how concrete the tool is as well. When would you recommend using the alignment tool, or the alignment map, I mean?
And so I would recommend using this at the beginning of a rotation to sort of set expectations in a group. So I walk in day one, I'm a new attending. We've got a couple of residents, we have interns, we have med students, and sort of sitting down and saying, hey, how quickly do we want to respond? What should we discuss over text? Like, there's a code in, you know, this room versus what can be discussed on rounds. And I think setting expectations can really set the team up for a successful week together. The cons or disadvantages of this is that it is time intensive. Hospital inpatient medicine can move very quickly, and not often there isn't always time to be able to do this realistically with every group with whom you work.
I think there is room, though, Ellie, to like adapt it, right? And to, you know, you said that you kind of adapted this from organizational theory and things like that. Like, there's potentially, maybe you do like a third of the map, or like maybe you space it out throughout the day or something like that. But I do love, as Mike said, how kind of clear, concrete, and very applicable it is to our kind of teaching and learning together across generations.
Very much so. And I think for me as an attending, it is very helpful where I don't want to walk into the week and, because I hold the most power in the group, say this is how things are going to be done. I want to be cognizant of the space I'm stepping into and adapt my teaching to that. And I think in that space, I then get to learn and grow from what the residents have been doing, which is super helpful.
Love it. Thank you so much.
Well, thank you, Ellie, for telling us about those different tools. I know, Sanjay, you in your workshop talked about a tool, more so an acronym, the BELIEVE acronym. And, you know, we at the pod really love a good Ted Lasso reference. So I wanted to ask about the acronym, kind of what does it stand for? How do we integrate that as we think about teaching and learning approaches?
Yeah, absolutely. I as well. Anything and in for anything and everything, Ted Lasso. And Ira, I love your paper, and I've cited it as well. And
Thank you.
And you all have created a psychological safe space. So if I mess up my own acronym, I won't feel bad. So, but the word BELIEVE, be curious, not judgmental, be a goldfish, learn from failure, invest in people, express gratitude, vulnerability is a strength, embrace uncertainty, and lastly, believe in belief. And so thinking about the acronym and kind of the components of the acronym, and especially thinking about it in our case here, right, we think about, again, all of us being in different spaces and different parts of clinical teams, recruitment teams, you know, feedback dyads, clinical operational teams, interdisciplinary teams, high performance, high accountability, but creating a space where those things can exist. And that's why psychological safety is so important. We talk a lot about growth mindset. And I think having that psychological safety and deliberately creating those environments is, at least from a learner perspective, we can really delineate between kind of linear growth and exponential growth. And I think when you have that space to be able to really find yourself and say, this is awesome, I really feel myself, I really kind of start to feel my groove, that's what we, those are the environments that we really want to try to create. And I love what Ellie was talking about, setting expectations. And I, you know, anytime I'm on service, the very first thing that comes out of my mouth with every team is, you know, we do introductory rounds and kind of get to know each other. And I always start with, you know, some of, obviously they may know me, but maybe I haven't worked with them. You know, I'm Dr. Patel. You can call me Sanjay. I'm a PGY18. I am on this journey with you together, right? And I think it really sets, level sets that playing field that I'm a learner too, right? You can be PGY2, PGY 20, PGY 40, there's always something new to learn. And it really shares with them, I am vulnerable. You know, the three most powerful words that any attending can say is, I don't know. And we will find out together, right? And so I think using a lot of these tools, and it really, it goes back to the acronym, like, this is how I am able to invest in people. This is how I'm able to show them my vulnerability. This is how we are able to navigate those uncertain spaces together. So a lot of the parts of the acronym are intermixed, interspersed together. But if you take a step back, I think that's why all the components of it are really important. And how do we create that psychological safe space? And in our case here, there are some of that already exists, right? The fact that Marianne and Jane actually felt comfortable going to somebody and saying, you know, for Jane saying, I learned differently, just to be able to say that. And for Marianne to go to somebody and ask for advice, right? Versus this could be a very different conversation where nobody said anything and then we're stuck. Where do we go from here?
Andrew, that was like a mic drop of a comment. I agree with you. I feel like they've kind of like dipped their toe in the water of the BELIEVE acronym. And I wonder, I mean, you kind of mentioned this around applying it into your own practice, into your own education and kind of your own learning. Are there other ways that you can kind of speak to your experience using this acronym? Or, you know, I don't know, Dina or Ellie, if anything comes up to you where you're like, oh my gosh, Sanjay, I could have used this in XYZ way, or I have, just to kind of make this really an applicable tool for our listeners. And Sanjay, if anything comes up that you haven't mentioned yet.
Yeah, I think one of the one that jumps out for me is I'm an ultrasound and procedure person. So I teach a lot of procedures and have been doing so for years. And so be a goldfish is extremely, extremely important, right? There is undoubtedly, you know, supervising a procedure, undoubtedly a procedure that's not going to go the way that as we expect. Maybe it's a bit of troubleshooting. Maybe there's an adverse outcome, minor or major complication, right? We obviously are trying to prevent those, but things happen. And to make sure that someone is able to understand the situation, take some time to reflect, but then also say, move on, be a goldfish, forget about it, because I don't want that next procedure. I don't want this hanging over your head the next time you're doing a procedure and then you're in your own head, you're psyching yourself out and saying, I can't do this, I can't do this. And I want the learners to know, you absolutely can do this, right? Mistakes are going to happen. That's what we are here for. You're in an environment, a supportive environment where people are here to support you. And I want you to just, you know, next time it's time for a procedure, forget about that last time. This is a brand new procedure.
Just from my knowledge, maybe our listeners' knowledge, so being a goldfish means short attention span. Is that correct?
Short memory.
Mike's
not
like,
short,
how does the how does the goldfish fit into this? Yeah. Soccer? What's happening?
Great. So, you know, from the show, that be a goldfish, you know, they say goldfish is the happiest animal on earth because it has a 10-second memory. So remember that experience, but also forget about it and move on to the next experience. Like, don't let that thing hang over your head.
And I will say a quick shout out to Dr. Gupri Dhaliwal, who went into the like Australian fish literature, because as one does. And apparently goldfishes actually have pretty like durable memories. So Whoa. It's not necessarily scientifically accurate, but it is potentially a nice thing to say and slash a great myth, a great myth. And still the lesson stands, you know, of yes. exactly what Sanjay, as you were saying, to like, you know, appreciate the learning opportunity and then forget it a bit and then move on to the next learning opportunity, you know?
I have to put an asterisk next to it.
I had to, too. I was like, oh, no, the credibility of this. Yeah. Thanks, Australian fish scientist.
And that just reinforces, Sanjay, what you said, know what you don't know.
Mm. Yeah. Great point, Dina. And I don't know, Ellie or Dina, if anything comes up to you relative to Sanjay's kind of Believe acronym or something that you were like, oh, I've used this in my practice.
You know, I think Sanjay's example of procedures is very, a vivid memory came to mind that I actually just sort of debriefed last night with one of my coworkers after session. But my first lumbar puncture, I remember asking an attending that I felt psychologically safe with to supervise a procedure. An LP, you know, did the learning, the pre-pep, ready, gave it a go. Almost got to the space and then sort of vasovagaled and had to sit on the floor about it. And, you know, and he took over. And I was mortified. You know, this is someone I really respected. Here I am sitting on this hospital floor. What am I going to catch? And I think, and then I'm pretty confident the specimen coagulated before it reached lab. And I think, you know, that situation could have gone one of two ways. I think, had this attending taken the approach of like, get your act together, that's embarrassing, don't do that again, I think I would have totally shut down, not had the confidence to try again in the future. And I think he took more of an approach of, all right, you know, what did we learn? What went well? What didn't go well? The space felt safe. And I was able to be like a stereotypical goldfish, not a accurate evidence-based goldfish.
Scientifically sort of accurate.
You know, moving forward and being like, all right, you know, let's do this differently. But I think that's, Dr. Patel, as someone who supervises procedures, I'm sure you've seen all different scenarios and your learners are so lucky to work with you with that mindset.
I appreciate that. Thank you. Yeah, I mean, I remember the first few procedures that I did as an intern and as a resident, had things that have undoubtedly could have gotten better. So I share that vulnerability as well and saying, look, mm-hmm. I've been teaching procedures for a long time, but it didn't always start out so smooth.
Well, I know thus far we've been talking about learning across difference and, you know, seeing what is different among the generations and, you know, having that curiosity to not assume, but also just to learn individually what's different with each learner. One thing that we were thinking about and like, especially I know that Ellie, in your workshop, you had mentioned really focusing on similarities that are there between generations and really using that to your benefit as you interact with Gen Z learners. This question is for everyone. You know, how have you been able to do this in your educator lives, finding that similarity, focusing on it, and using it to your benefit?
Very much so. And I think, you know, on a very sort of superficial level, it's been so fun to see songs and connecting with colleagues over music. I think TikTok is really repopularizing many classic hits, Dreams by Fleetwood Mac, Running Up That Hill by Kate Bush. And I think it's very fun to see sort of all these generations appreciating the same music in the team space. But I think stepping back, if you ask a Gen Z resident or a Gen X faculty or boomer faculty what drew them to medicine, what they're afraid of failing at, what do they care about, what motivates them, the generational frame really dissolves fast. And I think we all want to be good doctors. We want to be good people and practitioners. And I think sort of powerful questions. And there's a social psychologist called Leah George who talks about meeting people in their onlyness, which is to say meeting people in the space that only they take up in the world. When you meet people there, I think you see people for people and less from the generation from where they came. And yes, generational events shape us, but they don't necessarily define us.
Wow. I'm just thinking about your onlyness. I really like that conceptualization of, you know, the who we are and the space we take up. And I don't know, Dina, if you have a thought relative to that, you know, focus by Ellie's team about similarities across generations as opposed to, you know, our differences.
You know, I think there are a lot of differences amongst the generations and so forth. But when you all sit down, you're really all a lot alike. And you really share a lot of similarities too. And it's interesting to learn from others as well. And we all can take away something from somebody else over the years. And I think that's what we need to all keep in mind as well, that there's somebody has something to offer to all of us.
Yeah, and I think that's such a true statement in terms of we all have so much to learn from each other, you know, whether same generation or different generation. Sanjay, anything to add in terms of finding the similarities cross-generation and kind of using it as you meld together as a team?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you know, change is constant. But as Lee said, you know, for as much as medicine and medical education has changed, it also hasn't. Thinking about, you know, what are the similarities, thinking about, you talk about who we want to be as doctors and professional identity formation. And I think at the core of that for all of us, regardless of what label you carry as a generation, I think that there's a lot that's the same in there. And there's a lot as educators, right? We want to train folks who are and we want to be effective communicators, you know, critical thinkers, patient advocates, compassionate caretakers. And I think that really breaks down, you know, what sometimes may be perceived as silos based on labeling as generations.
Well, maybe we can transition to Dina quickly thinking about also your workshop and kind of capturing the audience, the attention, thinking about communication as we think about these similarities across generations, not just the differences. And we appreciate how you kind of think about how you apply theories and approaches of the residents, you know, of a certain generation to kind of work with you and kind of continue your managerial role and their kind of progress with you. Is there anything we haven't mentioned to you that you feel like relative to your workshop and design and communication that's pertinent to this conversation kind of across generations?
I think we've all kind of touched, you know, in our different ways from the clinical to the non-clinical and how the generations have evolved, you know, in the course of time and how they respond to learning. I think if you get into medical education with the medical records and how they respond, communication even amongst transmitting medical information, you know, amongst people are now secure messaging and things like that, which kind of brings it up to the next level. Instead of a text on a phone or an email, it's a secure message. And I think that's changed our way in medicine, where before it was a page to a number and it called back and you discussed what the issue was. And then as time went on, you realized our newer learners weren't even carrying a page or we needed a different way to go. And so I think, you know, secured messaging kind of did that. So you could loop in a group of people together to talk about a specific patient and not breach any HIPAA and confidentiality with it. So I think it also made it smarter because you could have everybody on one conversation and it was really more patient-centric and the outcome was more beneficial in that way. So I think some of the communication that way has been more helpful, you know, has been helpful. And just getting in tuned, you know, us as administrators, getting in tune to how we can help our learners on the responsibilities that they need to that are non-clinical to keep them in compliance. So I think I've learned a lot, or I've had people in other younger generations that have helped me help bridge that gap. So I've learned from them, and they've learned to make this, you know, better for our learners. And that's what we try to describe in our workshop as well. We've all adopted different techniques, and they've showed examples of different flyers and things that I had over the years with named lectures that we've had come in, and now what they look like today. You know, capture, you know, the minimizing of color on a flyer and the fonts and things like that to kind of grab the attention, you know, now of the learner, and to have it, you know, more absorbed than having chaos, so to speak, on a piece. So, you know, I've learned a lot of things as well to be able to adapt, and I'm grateful for my team.
And hear a lot of great themes of flexibility and adaptability and open-mindedness in terms of, you know, maybe some newer ways or different ways of communicating can have their individual benefit as well. So
absolutely. Absolutely.
And many believe comments about being curious and many in like learning from things that didn't work out and maybe, you know, investing in people. So I feel like there's a lot of overlap with what we've talked about today, which is really nice to see. Well, there was a case to this episode, so I would wonder if each of you could share, you know, if you're talking to Marion, maybe you're in the hallway, you're kind of passing by, and she's, you know, they're just asking you for kind of a comment or a piece of advice. Is there anything when you consider maybe the actual feedback conversation, following up after that, you know, feedback, the F word, maybe any practical tips based on what y'all have shared today that you would provide, Marion? And maybe we start with Sanjay. Do you want to share a few, and then we'll pass it to Dina and Ellie?
Yeah, absolutely. I think a high level, I go back to what I said earlier about, you know, feedback kind of becoming the F word and a frame shift into kind of this coaching mindset. And a draw in, you know, Ted Lasso here and the sports analogy, and think about coaching, right? The role for Marion working with Jane is to not fix or help her with every single skill where she sees a deficit or that Jane hasn't met a mark. Pick several things, right? We don't do that if anybody's played sports or watched sports, right? You don't. One day you're practicing your three-pointers. One day you're practicing your foul shots. Another day you're practicing your rebound. So pick a couple tangible things that you notice, mm-hmm. and mm-hmm. let's formulate a plan around those. And let's formulate a plan where you can establish sort of a check-in to see how those things are going and are those strategies working. And if they are, fantastic. Let's keep working on those strategies. If they're not, let's pivot. Let's you know, brainstorm some other strategies around these specific skills. So I think at a high level, that would probably be where the general conversation would start. And then, you know, that leading into what we've talked about already, the curiosity, just kind of asking questions and exploring a little bit about where the disconnect may be.
Dina, would you like to share?
I think with the case with Marion, too, if she's not so sure, she could maybe discuss with one of the residents or fellows or another attending what she has observed and see if they've actually observed the same thing. And maybe they can help Marion understand maybe what Jane has done, or say, yes, you know what, I've seen this as well. I think we need to sit down and speak with Jane and see how she's, you know, seeing the situation. And see if we can maybe come to a conclusion on how better to work this.
Ellie, any thoughts on your end?
Yeah, you know, I think using the alignment map at rotation start could be helpful to name these expectations explicitly. I like what Dina was saying about, you know, what does this look like from Jane's perspective? And I think oftentimes, just because someone has given feedback doesn't necessarily that the feedback they thought they gave is consistent with the feedback that the learner heard and received. And I think that is, mentorship is so important in that oftentimes in residency programs, residents will have a mentor that they meet with regularly to go over feedback. And I think a conversation between Marion and that mentor could be very helpful then for when that mentor meets with the learner during their routine check-in to say, all right, you know, what feedback have you gotten recently? What are you working on? To really get everybody on the same page.
Thank you so much. Yeah, I think appreciate how practical the takeaways are in terms of the next steps. Wanted to kind of open up the space to ask if there's any other main take-home points or kind of like most important, crucial next steps in terms of being a better teacher to Gen Z?
Not necessarily anything new, but I guess I would maybe summarize a theme that I'm seeing here kind of over and over again is really that be curious, not judgmental, right? Not going into a space and assuming, but just actually taking the time with intention to sit down and learn about the situation, learn about the other person on the other end, you know, of the interaction.
Definitely.
Yes, and try to understand from their perspective as well.
Yes. I think from a generational standpoint, when you do look at the evidence, there is lack of robust data examining generational differences in academic internal medicine. And the data that we do have suggests that perceived differences exceed demonstrated ones. Sanjay and Dina, I like what you were saying about sort of curiosity before conclusions. One good question does way more than a second or third round of the same feedback.
Man, there's so many hashtagable comments here, but I really think curiosity before conclusions is definitely a great one, Ellie. Thank you for that. And, you know, I think like taking the other perspective, not jumping to conclusions, not, you know, being open and open-minded and curious and, you know, kind of even how you opened up as like having a growth mindset, right? Like we're all trying to learn from each other. And well, if there aren't any other take-home points, we always give the chance for guests to plug things that they are working on. So this could be a publication or resource, something that, you know, you are recently proud of or anything like that. So do you want to, you know, open it up for either last remaining take-home points if something just came to mind or anything that y'all would want to plug?
I can start again. I think one more take-home point, and I'll try to make it real quick. I don't know if anybody, another pop culture reference here, but if anybody's seen that Sesame Street episode that Janelle Monáe is on as a guest, and she sings The Power of Yet, where Cookie Monster's making cookies and they don't turn out, and Elmo's having trouble with a math problem and he can't get the answer. And as a frame shift for us as educators to know that somebody may not be able to do something, but it's important that we say they're not able to do something yet, and that we believe in them and we give them the tools to be able to get there. And someone may get there faster or at a different pace, but that we, our responsibility is to be able to give that sort of a mindset to all of our learners.
Very much so. I think bouncing off that yet is I am excited for the day when we record this podcast with someone who is a member of the Gen Z generation, you know? And that time will come very quickly.
Yet, Ellie.
Not yet, but soon. And I'm excited for that. Yeah. And then one thing, sort of looking at learners that are coming up, one thing I'm working on is a What I Wish I Knew Before Intern Year Chalk Talk series. For yes. My brother, who he's a fourth year med student starting internal medicine, best specialty. I'm biased, but best specialty in July. And yeah. I have a website, chalktalkmd.co, sort of chalk talk prep done for you by me, sort of sharing the knowledge I've learned and my experience with the people coming up and paying it forward.
Yeah. And you can call the talk If I Only Knew.
Oh my God.
I like that. Yes. Yeah, we'll have to chat outside of this.
Yes. Amazing. Dina, anything that take home points or remaining or anything you want to plug?
I gosh, everybody's really has said a lot of the thoughts that I've had and to go through it, but I think it's always very good. And I agree, we need to have the Gen Z learner on with us. And, be able to see their point of view from our conversation and see if they felt that they are being heard.
Mm-hmm. And yeah. Maybe this is a part one. We don't have them on yet. We'll do a part two where we each all share our application of these tools that we discussed. And yes. Then the person who identifies with Gen Z will let us know if we did so well or efficiently. authentically.
They can do a live reaction to the episode.
Yes, exactly. Where we do a reunion. It's like the drama mic, right? We do a reunion episode and then we kind of live react to it, or they live react to it. I love it. And Sanjay, I don't know if you, thank you, Ellie. Thank you. Sanjay, I don't know if you had a plug that you wanted to mention.
I don't, not necessarily a plug, but I think I'm kind of meshing and leaning heavily, as we probably all are, into the space of AI and precision learning, and thinking about how that applies to, you know, individual learners and kind of a newer generation, and how do we approach things and kind of frame shift and think about creative and different ways to approach people, just like in this case. So I'm looking forward to see exploring that over the coming years.
Love it. Well, that can definitely be our part two or three, you know, to this to this series. It's not as great as Chalk Talk Co, but it's, you know, it's on the on the horizon, Ellie. Well, thank you all so much. Really appreciate it. Anything else, Mike, that we wanted to share or ask?
No, I just appreciate all your different perspectives and really appreciate the discussion today, for sure.
Yes, it's been a lot of fun talking with everybody today. Thank you.
Yeah, absolutely.
Thank you.
Wow, Mike, that was a lot for us to consider. This was amazing. I think one thing that I'm going to take with me is exactly what Ellie said at the end, which is kind of this curiosity before conclusions. I think sometimes it can be hard to include curiosity in your thinking or kind of referencing things, but I'm going to really try to give that my first attention is kind of the tell me how you were thinking about this, or kind of what made you say this, as opposed to like why or, you know, anything else, to jumping to conclusions, but focusing on curiosity first. What about you? What's your take home point?
Yeah, I think for me, I really liked the discussion. I think for me, it was more so the take home point of individualize and not generalize. I think there's this kind of bias sometimes where we make generalizations of Gen Z does this, Gen Z does that. But I think one important point they mentioned was just to individualize it per person and, you know, per learner, and to not just make assumptions. Kind of like tying in with what you mentioned with curiosity. I feel like those tie in well together of just not assuming and really individualizing learning, individualizing teaching for the specific person.
I love it. Well, this has been another episode of our Curbsiders mini-series, Curbsiders Teach. Get your show notes at thecurbsiders.com/teach. A special thanks to the Alliance for Academic Internal Medicine for helping me make this season possible, and to our overall editing team for helping us with behind-the-scenes script and show writing, to Dr. Matt Watto and Dr. Paul Williams for their support in this project. Thanks to the team at Podpace for editing and production support. And until next time, I've been Dr. Ira Krzyzanowska.
We're committed to providing you with high-quality, practice-changing knowledge, and to do that, we need your feedback. So please subscribe, rate, and review the show on Apple Podcasts, or contact us at thecurbsidersteach@gmail.com. A reminder that this and most episodes are available for CME credit for all healthcare professionals at curbsiders.vcuhealth.org. All you have to do is create an account for that. I've been Dr. Mike Chang. Thank you for joining us today and letting us bring you a little nugget of medical edutainment.